Morning, honorable members. I'm Alvin Mangai, the panel advisor for the joint meeting.
Good morning, members. I'm Peter Daniels. I'm the content advisor for Public Committee on Change and Policy Research.
Good morning, honorable members. Vladimir van Rensburg. I'm the researcher for the joint study committee.
Thank you. Welcome, Coach of the Committee.
My assistant, Mr. Kimmel.
Coach. Thank you. Thank you, Coach of the for
the aim of the presentation is to report on the dashboard issues that were identified by the committee, and also to follow up on the implementation of the TSI report, which was sent to the committee in December. If we go to then slide four, the issue raised on the dashboard was that the department should enhance its efforts to address underspending and underperformance through the TSI and the Action DG to improve the lives of military veterans. Let me say, share that upfront, that the implementation of programs and our approach to programs and issues in the department is continually informed by the analysis done by the TSI and the guidance given in the report. And in addition, we use the time frame issues that we raised in the presentation to the Joint Standing Committee in December as our guide in that regard. We are also busy with a report which will create a table which will list individually each issue's report on the program, the progress for each issue as per the TSI report, and then also give deadlines for implementation of those individual steps. And we'll let the committee have those issues. In terms of underspending, we have taken, firstly, we've been faced with a situation where there's increasing demand for benefits. That's in particular the education benefits, where the demand has gone up from 5,300 in the last academic year to now 8,750 beneficiaries. That's more than a 50% increase in 1 year. And it's created a huge pressure on the administrative abilities of the department, because we haven't had a 50% increase in officials to deal with the matter. And also, it's as what has been discussed in other forums, including Wednesday's meeting, the budget has been far exceeded for education. Well, the budget is 26.4 million. Spent at the moment about 100 million, and we intend to spend about 150 million on that. So we've had to find funds elsewhere from other programs, we hope that our current budgeting processes will not lead to the same situation in the coming financial year, that we budget properly enough. As we've tried to also deal with delivery and housing, we've done a lot of work in that regard, and we're hoping that in the next few months we will see the rollout of a significant number of houses to military veterans. We had discussions with the executive authority and the Minister of Finance and the DG of Finance and their team. We explained the problem in writing as per the CFMA to them with regard to the overexpenditure of education support. And we informed them that we would like to use the money that was budgeted in this financial year for housing to use most of it, not all of it, but most of it, in education support with their agreement, so that we don't use that money for the coming financial year. And they've agreed to that because the steps we took to deliver houses only really began in November and December, and the portion that DMD needs to pay to top up the housing subsidy from DHS will only need to be paid in the coming first quarter of the coming financial year. So we would not be spending that money on housing, most of it. We are spending some of it, but most of it. So we have an agreement with them in that regard, that they will not penalize us for using that money for education, and it will still be available in the financial year. Let me say also that the EXCO has taken certain decisions in the last week around maximizing expenditure in this financial year. We don't want to sit with a situation of accruals and needing to pay accounts from this year and next year. So we've taken a number of steps to streamline the processes of processing invoices, making sure there's proper documentation which is available to the CFO's office so that they can make payments. I want to preempt the view that this is fiscal dumping. I think that what it is, although a lot of the expenditure is taking place in this money, it's the result of plans that we began to make in November and December to accelerate delivery and to make more efficient our internal processes to allow delivery and to allow expenditure. Some of these plans result in the invoices only becoming available during February and March. For instance, if you look at education, which is a large section of our budget, the academic year starts for schools in January and for universities and higher education institutions in February and March. That means that we only get those invoices in January, February, and March, and it's impossible to pay them before that time. So having made the processing of those applications more efficient, rather than doing what happened in the beginning of this financial year, where those things were largely paid, started to be paid in April, May, and June, we're now actually paying them in February and March, which are the last 2 months of the financial year. So a large amount of what we are spending now is not fiscal dumping, but has to do with the misalignment, for instance, of the academic year with the financial year. Then in other areas, for instance, in skills, there's been a tightening up of the processes and more focus on rolling out the services. That's also led to payments now. If you look at the SRD system, it was introduced in the second quarter of the financial year, but the uptake has increased. So now, since December, January, there's more beneficiaries receiving SRD, and that results in increased expenditure at this time. Similarly with other services. So, it's not just a matter of dumping, as has happened in the past, where payments were made to provinces and so on. Everything we're paying now is on the basis of a service that has been delivered, rather than sending money and banking it to different services. So I just wanted to assure members that as we deal with underspending as per the item on the dashboard, that we're not just passing money around. We are paying according to services and as a result of the delivery improvement plans that we have in place. Then, Chair, if you look at the next slide, is taken from the presentation we did in December on the CSI report. Just to remind you of the roadmap for implementation of the CSI. The first phase was phase north, which was the diagnostic period and the work done by the CSI. Then we said from November December until March this month, the end of this month, we will be arresting the decline, and we'll be focusing on a number of areas: the database, funding, benefits, and those are the key areas that we will be focusing on. I'll talk a bit more about the database in a bit. Then phase two, it starts from the 1st of April for the next financial year, and there we continue the process of reorganizing things, rebalancing the organization, again with the continuing the focus on the database, finding benefits, and then hopefully by the end of the coming financial year, the organization will be in a position to sustain the changes that have been made in the implementation. That then lays the basis to deal with the issues raised from the next slide onwards. The progress made with regard to provincial offices. Chairperson, we currently have offices in three provinces. We are not happy with the process, the progress that's been made in this regard. I would have preferred if I could report to you that we had offices in nine provinces. This puts a huge pressure on military veterans, as they're unable to go to a local facility to access our services and departments. Many veterans have to come to Pretoria to do simple things like make applications, find information on the request they've made. That in itself puts a huge pressure on the officials of the departments, because there are continually large numbers of beneficiaries in the offices of the department which are not designed to cope with such a huge load. We've at times had to use, for instance, our auditorium as a waiting room. We've had to use our canteen as a waiting room, as a temporary office, in order to deal with the load. And it creates a lot of frustration, both from the military veterans and from the official side, because the working environment is not as it should be in the office. Also, the lack of offices puts a lot of pressure on the officials employed by the departments in the provinces. Some of them are literally working out of their car boot. It's not the way that officials can function. We don't have a filing system, we don't have a telephone, we don't have a place to work. We've made some temporary arrangements. For instance, in KZN, we've made a temporary, we have temporary arrangements with SAADF to use offices both in Marisburg and in the Bluff and Durban. But as the official deployed in the Bluff, keeps on saying in meetings, her office is smaller than the toilet. And of course that's not a correct working condition. So it becomes very difficult to motivate staff members and to maintain high morale in such a situation. There are some problems with public works in this regard. Maybe the committee would like to consider discussion with public works. I've reviewed the documentation in this regard. The documentation goes back many years in engagement with public works. It seems that at some point during 2005 and 2006, public works literally dropped the ball because there was no process. And then they restarted putting out tenders and so on. But that is an unacceptable situation, but also I think it's wrong that DMV has not been tightly monitoring the pushing of the program. So this is a big worry for me, and I think it's a big worry that I pick up in my engagements with military leaders. Friday we had a staff meeting with the big insurance staff meeting. And I'm not disputing any of that. The staff are correct to raise this, and the policy directors are correct to raise this. And I hope you will feel that us as peer directors really is impacting on service levels. In terms of serial point 9 about the appointment of staff and that the best person for the job should be employed, I try to follow the employment processes set down in terms of the Public Service Act and the regulation. I think we do follow this. I think the issue that the department faces is that sometimes it takes a long time to process applications. And there have been a number of cases where adverts have been done, applications have been received, but the shortlisting and appointment process, interview process, has not been completed within the prescribed time frame. So we are monitoring that and trying to ensure that those things are put in place. We do have a preference to recruit military veterans, and we have many military veterans on the staff complement. We need to ensure, however, that there is unity amongst the staff and the officials, that we build morale and common vision of our work, and that there are not divisions between, say, military veterans and non-military veteran staff. We would hope that by appointing military veterans, we would get a heightened level of commitment to service delivery, because they would be servicing those that were in the trenches. We go to serial 10 on the issue of interns and contract workers. We're paying a lot of attention to the organigram and at the same time filling vacant posts. We are encouraging contract workers to apply for vacant posts. I think also once we have finality on the organigram and the funding of it, we would need to fill a lot of those positions with contract workers. Many contract workers have been in the employ of the department for a number of years, some more than 3 years, and we feel we have an obligation to those contract workers. However, at the same time, we need to have a proper performance management system in place for all officials of the department, including contract workers, and monitoring of that. With regard to interns, interns have also come to play a key role in the department, and a number of our systems rely on interns. It creates a problem because the intern policy is quite explicit that interns are with the department for 1 year, and then it means a high turnover of staff. We also have taken a decision to do performance assessment of interns to see which ones like to keep after the internship completed, but they would then no longer be interns, but either employed in permanent positions in the department or contract workers. With regard to strategic planning, policy development, monitoring and evaluation, I would just like to delete the first bullet there. I don't think that the functioning of these branches depends on the approval of the new organizational structure. We have officials already in these branches, and they need to be performing where they are. Obviously, as the new structure comes in, we will increase their capacity of those units to do what's required. But until we have the new structure, we need to work with what we have and perform in that situation. The number of vacancies have been filled there. We need to, and we are paying more focus on strategic planning, having proper project management plans for the projects we're involved in, quite a bit of work around policy development. We approved the education support policy. We are about to approve the housing benefit policy. We have approved the supply chain management policy. We are busy with the policy on policies. We realized as we were approving the other policies that we actually need a policy which outlines the process of approving policies. We've had some discussions around those. We're also busy with a bill to amend the Act, and that has a number of policy implications. So, we are busy with an operating procedure on the database, which also will require policies at some point. So you can see that quite a lot of work has been done in terms of getting a framework in place for the delivery of benefits and accuracy of the labor policy. Monitoring and evaluation is also an area where we need more work. As we roll out benefits, we need to have monitoring and evaluation of the processes around that. We're also increasingly using our compliance units and our internal audits to verify the reported delivery, so that we have confidence in the reports that we receive, and we're able to pass that on to yourselves and external audits. In terms of performance agreements, there is only one outstanding performance agreement. Unfortunately, this was a situation that I inherited. Unfortunately, the public service regulations require that performance agreements be completed in the first month of the financial year, and then the regulations only give another month to resolve disputes. Now we're in the last month of the financial year, and it's difficult to use regulations after the fact to deal with them. So this is an issue I'm really pleased with, it will require firm action from my side in the next few years. But otherwise, I think we can happily report that all our performance agreements are in place. In terms of the database, Chair, we've spent a lot of time on the database. It's at the center of all delivery and all activities of the department. I must say that, unfortunately, up until now, the functioning of the database, as you know, has not been regulated properly. It also has led to the situation where many of us have doubts about the accuracy of the data. So we've engaged the services of DBSI, which is part of OnScore. They have a lot of strategic ability. So we've asked them to pay particular attention to the database and advise us on how to take steps to normalize the situation there. We have a plan of work for that. Central to that is the development of a standing operating procedure for the database, so that we have a written down procedure which guides everything that's done with regard to the database. To my mind, the absence of such a procedure has led to many of the problems that we have. And I don't think it's possible to do verification without following steps in a written down procedure. So we've paid a lot of attention to this. DBI has assisted together with the acting DDG SES, as well as the officials who've been dealing with the database up until now. We have a draft of the SOP. We're going to process it in the next few weeks through Manco and XP. of different things that we need to do in that regard. The one is to verify the existing information. Two is to make an assessment and verify the applications that the department has already received, which haven't been processed, and then three, process new applications. We also need to streamline our ability to use other governmental databases, whether it's Home Affairs, Department of Defense, engage with SARS to ask them for access to some of their information, which needs to be verified, and other databases. We have also looked at the hardware and software issue. I want to stress again that the computer issues are not the most important issues in this regard. They are important. We need a proper computer system, but we can have a computer system, but we can still have the same problems if we don't look at the processes of verification, the actual verification, doing how we actually do the verification. So after our discussions with CISA, which we reported last week to the portfolio committee, we're progressing in that regard. We've received from CISA an assessment of the software issues that need to be resolved, and we're meeting with them again on Monday to implement their assessment. It should be that we would be able to stick to the time frame that was outlined, that by the middle of April we'll have the software solution by and large for the department. But that's not, as I said, that's not the key part. The key part is to agree on the procedures, the SOP, and then to begin the physical verification, which can happen with or without the software. In terms of, I was talking about software, the other area besides the database is to link the database to the other procedures of the department, the rollout of benefits, and that is also one of the specifications that's been given to CISA to begin to design that system, which will take a bit longer. So at the moment, most of approvals are done through manual files, like physical files as well. Have to be carried from office to office and to be verified. So we want to eradicate that and be able to do things on the computer. The report reports the numbers here on the database at the moment. The other issues, I think I've covered most of them. If we go then to slide 10, which deals with funding of the department. As I've said, I think we're beginning to turn around the spending issue. We have detailed plans per branch to support the delivery of benefits to military veterans. I think when we get to discuss the APP and the budget, you will see those issues being raised. We are weekly monitoring implementation and spending. That means that we also monitor the targets that are in the APP, not just the spending, but spending that's been linked to the regional targets. And IFCO deals with those things on a weekly basis. And also on a monthly basis, we now have risk reports, which we are discussing in our management. We also are looking at alternative funding, and we have begun an engagement with the Department of Defense on that. On page 11, or slide 11, the allocation with regard to benefits, the allocation of specific responsibility within DMV for refinement, clarification, and implementation of each benefit allocation criteria. As I said earlier, we've been working on a policy time to deal with finalizing the policies. Once we have policies, we can then have proper standard operating procedures for benefits. So we have the, as I said, the policy on education support. We have a draft policy on housing benefits, which is at a very advanced stage, which should be approved very soon. And then we are busy developing policies on other benefits. Chair, let me also say that we've identified some gaps in the regulation, and we'll also be making some proposals in the regulation. Members would have observed that there's no regulation on education support, and that we will be formulating a regulation on education support to go through the process outlined in the Act. We will also be making some proposals to adapt the regulation on housing so that it also deals with some of the other issues we've been engaged with, for instance, the issue of support for farmers. We have a much clearer regulation in this area. Then in terms of budgetary principles and the service delivery charter, we have a service delivery improvement plan, and we are needing to change it a bit to bring in more focus on budgetary. It's an issue that we've raised a number of times with the officials of the department of budgetary, and I think if you come to our offices in Pretoria now, you'll actually see on the walls the budgetary principles pasted all over the building, so that it's a constant reminder of the kind of service that our clients require, and it's something that's been raised in all the departments. Including local government, to support delivery of benefits. There's more work that needs to be done in this regard. We intend to have a meeting with TALGA in that regard, and we will be requesting local government to make space available in some of their buildings so that we can use them on an ongoing basis to access the two bedrooms and to use for delivery. Integrated benefits delivery channel, we still have to develop a framework on that. The total benefits allocation required and prioritized according to beneficiaries and available funds. We have been working on the budget for benefits, as you'll see it in the APP in the coming budget. The view of the department is that most needy military veterans need to be prioritized in the rollout of benefits. However, there's not consensus on this issue, in particular with our stakeholders, in particular with FUNVA and the Advisory Council. We've had a very difficult engagement with them about the education support policy, which policy basically, based on the Act and the regulations, the policy talks about implementing a means test. The policy also talks about only supporting those that get education from public institutions, in other words, state institutions, and not private institutions. There is not consensus on that issue with the Advisory Council and FUNVA. They don't agree with that. It's my view that they only agree with the means test because it's in the Act, but they don't agree with the implementation of the means test. And this has made it very difficult for us to implement the policy when our key stakeholders don't agree on basic issues in the policy. And really, co-chair, I think that we do also require the assistance of those who wrote the Act in implementing. would really encourage the Joint Standing Committee and the Portfolio Committee to engage further on that particular matter, because we as I say, this is what we put in the policy. It's what our understanding is of the guidance from Parliament and from the executive authority, but we haven't been able to implement it. And I'll be the first to say I think that I feel that I've lost the argument in that regard, and I need your assistance in that regard. So the policy is there. The agreement is we will implement it in the coming financial year, but the reality is that there's not happiness with the policy. So we need your assistance. In particular, the needs test becomes more and more important as we are able to spend more and more money. We need to have ways of controlling expenditure and making sure that the expenditure is on the areas that needs the most, is to veterans who need the most support. And that's what a needs test should be. I think I've said enough about that. In terms of benefits, to develop and develop a communication plan, we have a plan and strategy which will be approved soon and will be rolled out. We've been trying to do a series of roadshows to the provinces. We have struggled with the implementation of that, but in the coming weeks we'll pay much more attention to that, and I think you'll see us on the ground in the provinces. The integrated benefits distribution, I think that a large part of that will be helped by the dealing with the database issue. That will help us to understand the benefits that each veteran acquired, and then to plan much more scientifically the rollout of those benefits, rather than waiting for applications to come through the department. The creation of a management team, I think we've done a lot of work in that regard. We have a cohesive team which meets very regularly, which tries to deal with all the key issues facing the department, and we've been spending a lot of time as the senior management in that regard. The MANCO, which includes middle management, has also been meeting regularly, and mainly been dealing with the policy issues. But I think there is more work to be done in bringing the middle management on board to understand clearly the direction we have as the department, so that we have more cohesiveness and consensus about how we roll out benefits. The permanent appointments, we had a full complement of DDGs until the one DDG resigned in December. We will be advertising that post in the next week or so. We got approval from the minister this week to advertise the post. In the meantime, Mr. Mutsi has been acting in that position, and I think you can see the results of the work he's been doing there in the increased rollout of the European branch. We've also, last Sunday, advertised a large number of middle management posts, chief directors, directors, deputy directors, to try and capacitate the department at that level. The change management consultative process began in December, and as reported earlier, we're engaging with now with PCSA and National Treasury on the new organogram, and then once we have consensus on that, we'll be able to take it forward. Governance of LIRC, the delegation the focus on service delivery. We have started with the area of finance, the financial budget and supply chain delegation. Obviously, given issues raised by the Auditor General, those were crucial to put in place. We've signed off on those delegations. We also have put in place the supply chain management committees that are required, and those committees are now functioning as per the list. Improve the risk management register. We have a risk register. As I said earlier, we have begun to discuss it in the management structures, the EXCO and the MANCO, and as also required by the regulations. As we have more discussions on it, I think our risk registry will become more accurate and more helpful in that regard. Then clarify the roles and responsibility of Sandler Advisory Council and the Appeals Board. We've done a lot of engagement with them. We have a workshop planned for next week where we will be together with the ministry having a focused discussion on the roles and functions of the different structures. Our feeling as management is that the management of the department must run the department, and these structures must play an advisory role. Obviously, in the case of the appeals board, it has a direct oversight. People appeal decisions taken by the department, and I don't think we've had any issues with them. However, with the advisory council at Sandra, we need to ensure that they play a clear role in terms of representing their constituency, in the case of Sandra, to the department, and the advisory council giving advice on policy. So we hope after next week's workshop this issue will be clarified. In terms of the structure and business process engineering, I think I've reported already on that. The intention to change the organogram and consult on that. And also the business process re-engineering also relates to the adoption of SAP and the implementation of operating standards. Performance assessment, it is being conducted, but there needs to be a lot more improvement in the way it's done, and also there needs to be the results of the assessment need to be used to make management decisions more. So we are busy with that. The skills audit, we have a framework for the skills audit. It will be implemented, and by the end of the coming quarter, we hope to be able to report to you on the outcome of the work. The training plan, we use the performance management system in terms of developing training plans. But I must say also, in the process of re-engineering some of the business processes, it's also become clear there are gaps in training, and branches have made some recommendations, specific skills that officials require in order to operate in the new environment. Communications, a communication plan. As reported earlier, there is a plan which needs to be approved, and the management plan will be developed by the end of the second quarter. Financial performance, complying with the AG's reports. We've introduced into the department a process of having collective discussions on the findings reported by the Auditor General. In the current audit that we're busy with, we've had a number of meetings with them. We've preceded those meetings with our own discussions in EXCO's largely about the audit findings, and I think that's resulted in a lot of progress in terms of addressing the issues raised by the audits general, and we're still quite hopeful that we will see an improved audit result for this financial year as a result of the steps that we've taken in that regard. I think also, and I hope the AG would agree, she's not here today, but there's an improved relationship and openness with dealing with these issues. I think in terms of accountability for funds, I think that comes out of that. We've also been spending a lot of time trying to ensure that we have documented evidence for all the decisions we take and the decisions that are signed off. Correlation between allocation of benefits and funding. We've costed the APP for the coming year in terms of the funds and the related benefits. I've raised the issue of the need for probably in the coming year for more money to roll out these benefits. And also the internal shift that seems to be required. We need to continue to shift money to actual service delivery from administrative functions. Okay, the database management plan. I think I've said enough about the database strategy. Just to highlight the point on the integrated ICT system, linking the database to benefits, which would be the second step once we've sorted out the database issue. And I think we reported in detail last week to the portfolio committee on the steps that were taken with CISA. With regard to the call center, I want to reiterate that we are moving to a situation where the department's officials will be the staff running the call center, so that we have a closer link between the front line, which interfaces with military veterans, who phone the call center, and the department. We will approve a plan for that over the next few weeks. I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now I will turn over to the other members to ask questions. Honorable Chester and Frodo, honorable member, I think.
Thank you, Chair. My concern has always been the issue of knowing the quantum, how many people actually require benefits after a very robust process has been followed. Of course, we don't know that quantum because the verification processes are not done. And the projected one under the Alexander Forbes report way back was 64 billion in people had received, and that was a limited amount. 55,000 people at the time. That has now escalated to 73,000 military veterans on the database, and of which 37 was verified according to our last annual report. Now that verification is also questioned by the DG that there should be a SOP in place and proper procedures to, of course, authenticate and check all documentation that is used in the process to ensure that every military veteran that received the benefit is actually deserving of that benefit. And I think we support that process. We don't have a problem, and the support that we get from SIU and others, and whoever, SARS and whoever is involved in the process, to make it robust so that we can manage the money we have for those who are most deserving. I think that is what we want to achieve at the end of the day. So the issue that I have is that the planning is taking place. The issue of the budget currently is that the balance within the budget has not been stable at all. For all the years this department has been existing, never been stable. Last year we had almost underspending by 50%. Now, what I'm saying is that the alignment going ahead with the MTF and with a new DG in place, that are those benefits balanced? If we know that the housing cannot be implemented, 1,000 cannot be done, although the planning is for 1,421, that money will then be adjusted accordingly and moved to another benefit so that it is not wasted and it is duly processed and accepted and Parliament actually passes that adjustment budget. So there's a need for that to be done, because I already anticipate what will be the impact report. According to what happened last year, there's not much improvement at all. The 1.2 we had, 1.5, I don't think it can exceed the 1.6. With all the issues that have happened last year, maybe next year it will be better. But we'd like to have some, because we don't have any information on the impact at this stage. But the inputs, we can see this progress being made, but the actual report will still be a very bad one. That all systems are not in place. So it actually needs to be on board to actually do a proper calculation and projection so that we can then, over the MTF period, allocate accordingly, taking into consideration all the risk attached to every benefit that must be rolled out. Some cannot be rolled out simply. The transport plan is not in place. Policy is not in place. How will it be rolled out? So we know that benefit will not be effected immediately. So one has to then look at what money has been allocated. Do we allocate money to a benefit that will not be rolled out? Doesn't make sense. So it should be minimal, and it should be actually used towards policy development and, of course, regulation. So is that actually taking place within the department so that we have a more balance in terms of the realities that we are facing? Can we roll it? Can't we roll it? I think that is my major concern now, so that this department targets don't become unrealistic. Underperformance, underspending, under because it's just bad planning. The other one, the fiscal dumping, I agree, there's those periods, it's only certain benefits. In other instances, schools ask for money up front. When you register, you may have to pay already, which means if parents don't receive that money in the previous year when they actually register, and they've got to pay before the end of that current year, that means there's a risk attached to it. Unless the letter of surety comes from the department to say that those children, work fees will be paid as a commitment from the department. Otherwise, those children are also exposed and at risk that they won't be accepted in a school because money needs to be paid. So paying late is still part of the financial year, but also paying early, maybe in the third quarter of the year, because schools demand that when they register the children. The other one is database, the status of verification. I know the new approach that will be adopted. So does it mean that the 37% that we spoke about earlier and all in other reports, has that now been reconsidered? And will this process then be applied to everybody going forward? And how quickly can that be done? I agree to some extent with the FNDG regarding the systems, which is hardware and software. I don't have a problem. But unless you have that in place and you have tested it, you cannot work on documentation and input or capturing of information unless you have already put those systems in place so that it can be, that is the use of technologies to expedite it, to make it move much, much faster, so you can verify at a much faster rate. So there's an urgency about systems also being in place and ready for the data that's captured and verified that it be put into the system and processed very quickly so that we get the outcomes of who to qualify for which benefit specifically. The other one I've got a concern is the alternate funding. I'd like to have some ideas if we can maybe also participate and discuss some of those things of alternate funding. And we know there's always this threat of the department losing money, and the inflation has not been meeting the inflation of the country, so the growth of budgets have been actually negative, and therefore the services rendered will also be reduced. So we have a great concern for that, and part of our work that we have to look at economic growth and how we can raise more money. Sunva, I hear there's a workshop taking place. I hope there will be a legal advisor also at the workshop, because the matters are being contested and there has to be some legalities that are clearly clarified and given certainty. Otherwise, people will continue to believe that they have the right interpretation of the act and of regulation. So I think it's important that a legal advisor be present at those ones. Secondly, if SUNBA is playing an advisory role, like the advisory board that we have, SUNBA has entered into different agreements with different companies, with the private sectors and others, the MOUs, SLAs, and other ones, and even recruitment that's taking place with SUNBA. Would that still be relevant, or would that be reconsidered as well, that they only play that and the department actually manages all MOUs and SLAs and the rollout of recruitment and things that happen with military bases? The one of the skills audit, I'm very happy that's coming now to a head. And the additional one is a work skills plan, which means every employee must have a specific personal plan attached to their job that they are doing. Is that actually what is intended now? That there will be actually a work skills plan for each and every individual, and that they will improve their competencies. And of course, I cannot again overstress the importance of communication. A number of military veterans are phoning, are making inquiries, or sometimes harassing our staff in Parliament to give answers, to do things because of delays on the side of the department. Now I'm saying to the department, if we know the mean state is 125,000, many of these people don't actually read the regulations, don't read the act, they only heard their benefits. And then they phone and you must sort out everything for them. Is it possible that the mean state is one of the most important? 125,000. If you earn more than that, you don't qualify for any benefits. You don't have to apply for any benefits. And that would eliminate a lot of inquiries that's coming in. The 125,000, it is also not clear. Is that a joint income? Or is that a family income? Or is that only a military veteran's income? I think we need to spell it out very clearly. Where does it apply and how does it apply? Because under the housing, the human settlements arrangement, it is very clear if it's a joint or family income. 3,500 and less, you qualify for a full housing subsidy, a free house as given to your family. In this one, it is not actually spelled out very clearly. So those are some of the inputs I'll make at this stage, Chair. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you very much,
thank you very much. Issue that was raised by Honorable Minister. There is this problem that I really don't understand up until now since the formation of this department. In terms of offices, provincial offices, because there must be an involvement of provincial government in assisting the DMV in establishing those offices. That's my understanding. The issue of public works, it comes after. There must be a collaboration between the national public works and the premier's offices, you know, in all the land provinces, to assist in terms of the facilitation of saying to it that you get offices. The issue that was raised around the sunlight issue by Honorable Minister in terms of the MOUs, we don't know how involved are you, because let us be mindful of the fact that SANWA is a statutory association. So they are not supposed to do things willy-nilly. The question will be, the MOUs that they have signed with various companies, you must be able to track that down and who benefits in terms of those MOUs. In the last report, you were not there, FKPG. By the way, a number of agreements. I'm raising this because Honorable Uso is talking about the transport issue for military. But there were discussions, and I think there was an undertaking by the Department of Transport and even provincial departments of transport. They made a commitment, to my understanding, the last time I checked, you know, that they will assist, even going to the municipalities at some point. So how far are we? And I'm raising the issue of the dashboard. You know, the speed, when you move, you might be able to look back and say, no, this agreement for now, we are this far. You know? So there are a number of things that I believe you never check as the acting DG to say how far are we. Was there any proper handover by the previous acting DG, you know, to say these are the things that we have done and this is how far are we, you know. Another issue will be the issue of the reduction of the housing money. What I know, it was something like 170, yes. Now it has drastically reduced to 125. Which policy was used to reduce this money? Or what informed you to reduce that money, if it's you? Because I heard that the minister, talking about, actually, she never spoke less or more. She spoke about that amount, 170-something. But what informs you as DMV to reduce that amount? You know? There's another issue in terms of assisting those who are disadvantaged. Military veterans from the non-statutory forces. You know, I haven't heard you talking about assisting them because some of them, they want to go and study. You know? But they don't have matric. But they are experienced if there was something, some kind of assistance in terms of recognizing their prior learning, the RPS. What is the department doing in assisting those who are still willing to go back to school? You know? And we know that some of them, they qualify. They are far beyond those who are having papers, you know. But simply because of this thing of matric, they can't move. But let us have that there. Thank you. Over to you, Mr.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me deal with a few of the answers and then I'll let my team deal with some of the other issues. In terms of the benefits that veterans require and working it out beforehand, that once we have the database system working properly, then you'll know that the Act requires the department to make a yearly assessment of the requirements of each veteran. So my hope is that we'd then be able to move to that system, which is not really happening anymore. And then we'll have a much better picture of what we should be allocating to each veteran.
Sorry,
DJ,
I forgot one. Important thing in terms of what you're raised in terms of verification. Is there a possibility that there are people like Honorable, something very important. You know, people don't go through this document. They'll just see benefits, you know, and there'll be gunning or rushing to get those benefits, even if they don't qualify or they are not military veterans. Is there a possibility that if there are people who have benefited unduly to the benefits of military veterans, if we are talking about education, and what will be the consequences if they are discovered. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'll come to that in a moment. I'll ask the CFO when I'm finished just to respond on issues of budgeting and adjustment.
Don't forget the mic,
I'll ask the CFO to respond when I've gone through other questions about the adjustment and budgeting. Honourable Hesser, the underperformance in terms of money last year was 40%. The information on NPAT, we've done a detailed presentation to the portfolio committee on NPAT, but if the member requires any other information, we can give that. I take the point about using an actuary to try and quantify some of the issues, and it's something I think we should look at. The database, I just want to clarify what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is that we need hardware, software, and the system. But often when we think about the database, we tend to want to just think about hardware and software, whereas actually the difficult part is the verification part. And the verification is not done by hardware or software. It's done by people following a verification procedure. And that's what I want to stress, because, yes, Chair, I do think, I can't quantify it now, but I do think there are people who are on the database who should not be on the database. And I think we need to deal with that in the verification process. And at the moment, if you're on the database, you automatically have access to the system. So it's quite possible there are people who have benefited and who should not be benefited. And that's why it's so important to sort out the database. But I hope that as we, in particular in the next few months, as we start implementing the verification process, we'll come to you with numbers around that and names if necessary as well. I can say that there is, for instance, also one court case that the department is involved in, where a person's application for registration was rejected. And that person has appealed to the courts about that issue. And the more we engage in the courts on that issue, the more we've been checking on the records. This person claims to have been a member of the FNDS. The military records, which are fairly accurate, actually indicate that someone else has the force number that this person is claiming. And we've also picked up, just as we've gone along, that there seems to be some people who try to use other force numbers to get themselves involved. So I'm just saying that these are issues we're dealing with on a daily basis. But at the moment, we don't have an overall report. As we verify the documents, we'll be able to give you a much more detailed report on this and the issues we're dealing with. Alternative funding, we need to look at that. We had some brief discussions on that, but I don't think we have an overall plan for that. And part of it, I think, needs to include engagement with the Department of Defense and the Chief of the National Defense Force, because there are systems in place in the Department of Defense which I think would help alleviate the load on the DMD. For instance, you have the Army Institute, Defense Force Institute, which does provide similar benefits to what DMD provides to soldiers. And we need to engage on how we can take that forward. The other issue I've discussed briefly with the Chief of the Defense Force is the issue of setting up trusts, which serving members can contribute to while they serve, and which would then help to provide increased benefits once they leave the defense. So there's a number of things in that regard we need to look at. Potentially there are other ways of looking at this. In terms of SANBA, the issue we're going to be discussing next week is a clarification on the roles of the different bodies that are mentioned in that. Yes, there are issues in SANBA, but that's not on the agenda of next week's meeting. The issues of SANBA, we continue to engage with SANBA and the affiliates of SANBA on, and we hope that we would get to a resolution soon of those issues. As the department, we've made some recommendations to the executive authority, and I think the minister is trying to get to a point of consensus on the kind of recommendations that we've made. The means test, let me say, because I think, Honourable Esso, you seem to be implying that there's one means test for each of the benefits, and that's not the case. The Act says that every application needs to be subjected to a means test, okay? But we would set different means test levels for different benefits, okay? So, for instance, when it comes to education support, in the policy that we adopted, we've set the level at 400,000 euros. We even have agreed with, in our engagement with SANBA and the Advisory Council, to reconsider that number, because you would know that ENSFAS is looking at implementing a number of around 600,000 to cover the missing little pieces. So, say again?
It's capping the season.
No, it's not capping, I'm talking about a means test. In other words, whether you get the benefit, your income must be below the means test level. So we've set 400,000. ENSFAS is talking about 600,000. So in our engagement with our stakeholders, we've agreed that we should look at whether we shouldn't align with the ENSFAS figure or have a greater amount than that. The means test, so for education, is set at that level. Education is set at that level. When we look at housing, the means test is set currently at the lower level, okay? Which is, I think, it's around 125,000 income, which we also think is too low. That's the same level that is set for ordinary citizens applying for RDP housing. So we think that we should be advantaging military veterans because they shouldn't have to, their criteria should be different from those for just an ordinary citizen, because the aim of giving these benefits to military veterans is to recognize the contributions and sacrifices they've made, which ordinary citizens haven't necessarily made. So therefore, we, in our policy, we're looking at that issue of the housing means test. The issues that you raise about the means test are the issues that we are also concerned about, whether it should be a joint income or a separate income. There are also a lot of complications with that once you start dealing with individuals. You know, a military veteran might have been married to someone, but they might no longer be actually living together and in that relationship. So that creates a whole other complication in the situation. Military veterans might have registered on the database, declared an income, but later married someone, and that has implications. There's also other problems. There are many cases, one of which I was dealing with yesterday, where military veterans were married, the military veteran passes away, the wife has sacrificed herself, whether she was separated from her husband for many years, or they lived together in exile, but she didn't qualify as a military veteran, but they were in the struggle together at different levels. Now the military veteran has passed away. In terms of the current regulations, we cannot provide a house to that family, because a house can only be provided to a living military veteran. Now that to us is also a problem, because it's not taking the reality on the ground. That family is sacrificed, not just the military veteran. And we need to recognize that sacrifice of the whole family. So there are quite a number of issues in that regard. So I think the means test needs a lot more work and discussion, and also your assistance, like I raised earlier, Chairperson, help us in Parliament to continue to help engage on what your intentions were in that regard. I don't think the intention was to disqualify a military veteran from getting benefits. But that is not our view, but that's the impression that's out there. On the other hand, as I said earlier, a means test is a powerful tool if it's used correctly to direct resources which are limited to those who need the most. So we need to engage more on that question. Haman Lindsay raised the issue of provincial officers, and I agree fully with you. We need to have that report, we need time frames. Chairperson, with regard to the officers, you raised the engagement with the provinces, which you've done to some extent. In Northwest, the provincial government has actually provided us with the office accommodation. And with the issue that we've raised, also, we've had some tentative arrangements with some of the municipalities, whilst we are waiting for public works, that they could provide us with accommodation. This requires more attention from the officials if possible in this regard. The database, yes, we are providing attention, and I agree also on the pace of vacancies. It's a really important thing. Chair, in terms of the dashboard and how far we're going, I like your analogy of the car, and I like to look at both the speedometer and the rev counter, because as you say, you can be revving the engine, but you've still got your foot on the clutch. We might not be going forward at the speed. I hope, like most things in change management and team building and delivery, there's a lot of groundwork that needs to be laid first. But hopefully you'll start seeing that in terms of forward movement and accelerated forward movement. I need to think a bit more before I give you a number. I take the point, and I think the colleagues also take the point that we need to somehow quantify how far we are along the path. MOUs, we've had a lot of discussion in management about MOUs and FUNDA. We would like to see from the department that the department signs MOUs and SLAs with entities which bind the department. It can't be right that SUNBA signs and makes agreements which bind the department, because the department hasn't been part of those processes. So we want to move to doing our own MOUs, of which we already have a lot, but that when it comes to delivery of benefits that the department is responsible for, that we do those things, and then we take in account how SUNBA and other bodies will assist us. As we see the relationship with SUNBA, SUNBA represents military veterans and their associations. When we want to offer a benefit to military veterans, SUNBA must assist in the communication of that this is available, and help us also to verify that we are fitting appropriate military veterans into benefits. For instance, with housing, which becomes very complicated because there are a number of situations where houses that we are delivering get occupied before they are handed over by people who claim to be military veterans. Some of whom are on the database, many of whom are not on the database. But that means that the veteran who's identified to go into that house cannot move into the house because it's now occupied by someone. Now, we think SUNBA has a key role to play in this. If we say that in this project we're going to deliver 20 houses and these are the veterans we intend to give those houses to, we would like SUNBA to buy into that allocation. That they would agree to it, that they would engage the local structures of the military veterans association. So there's agreement on that. And we think that will reduce the risk of these occupations and also other complaints about it, because we'll be able to say that we've consulted the formations on the ground. That is not to hand over the allocation to SUNBA. That's to build consensus with them. It's that kind of role we would like to see SUNBA play. And of course, write an MOU with the company, and then that would bind the department to that process if the department was a part of that process. So that's what we're trying to sort out. Also, generally with MOUs, there needs to be a strategy with them. Up until now, DMV has signed MOUs with all range of government departments, government entities, etc. But we haven't looked at, do we have the capacity to implement those MOUs? And we also haven't dealt with it from the other side. There's this benefit. So many veterans require this benefit. Who would we partner with in order to deliver the benefit? To me, that would be the more logical way and the more efficient way of signing MOUs. So that's also what we've asked the branch responsible to deal with, is to have a strategy for MOUs and a process that engages the department branches that can actually deliver on those MOUs. I think Dini Shimata can say something more in a moment on that. And then in terms of the housing money, as the chair, whether there was a proper handover from the previous acting DG. I've met with Dr. Gulube a number of times. Of course, he remains the Secretary of Defense. So I'm continually in meetings, and I phone him regularly if I have issues. Yes, we have had discussions on the handover, but he's always continues to advise me on the key issues. And I think much of my direction has also come from the engagements that I have with him, and he's a huge resource in that regard. And also, I'm saying that
there's a continuous handover.
No, but there's been a handover. There's been a handover, and I've been briefed by him. But I think that you know, when you have a handover meeting, it's an hour or two. It can't deal with every issue that comes up, and so continuously discussing with him and getting his advice. He's got a lot of experience in this. It's not like, you know, we had an hour discussion and then that was the end of the relationship. It's not like that at all. And he really is a serious friend of the department. He's also a
member.
Chair, maybe just in terms of the housing money, there's no reduction in the money for housing for military veterans. In fact, in the last year, there was an increase. The total amount available for qualifying military veterans is 188,000 rand, of which DMV provides 78,000, and DHS provides the other amount, the rest. It used to be 178,000, but it was increased during last year to the amount. So there's no reduction in the amount. So I think there might have been some confusion that was implied. And I think our feeling would also be that it probably needs to go up a bit more as well, because as inflation eats away at the value, it probably needs to increase. Those are the issues. Let me ask CFO just to talk a bit about the budget and adjustments process, and DG Marple to talk about the MOUs and that area. And Mr. Minister, if you want to say something on the benefits.
Thank you, Chair. Just briefly on the budgeting process, as DG has mentioned, as we are strengthening the systems and the methodology of tracking costs, then there has been discoveries to say there is no evidence that indicates that in the past there were attempts to analyze the total budget requirements for each benefit. Budgeting process should also look at all the key benefits in terms of whether that benefit, when there is budget, is actually going to be rolled out in the financial year. So there was no alignment at that time. So indicated, as we are now strengthening the systems of monitoring, then we have actually also requested the APP at the moment, which actually informs our activities for the next year. And in line with that, then we have identified that there would be a shortfall if we were to deliver on all benefits. Then immediately it has triggered our need to interact with National Treasury, then to also seek a budget adjustment. So as we have indicated, I think the board now is in motion, and we are seizing control, and we will ensure that a strong interaction with National Treasury as well as authorities in ensuring that the appropriate funds are made available for the department to roll out on the key benefits. I would like to
thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. On the issue of MOUs, I think the DG has responded to that, but I want to just add and say, points raised by Honourable Members are noted, and that the Department has been in the past chasing quantity in terms of how many numbers of MOUs that have been signed, and we are now having a shift. We're looking now at what those MOUs can do for the department. So we will be reviewing the MOUs that we have and those that SANVA has signed. On the issue of prior learning, the department is having two forms for education. There's education support, which has its own protocols in terms of admission, but we also have skills development, where military veterans with no necessary required qualifications do benefit through that. But we also facilitate as a department prior learning for military veterans. I must admit, Chair, that maybe we need to do more in terms of creating awareness and in terms of providing more support on that regard. What I want to also indicate is that the department do facilitate a work placement for military veterans. We are not where we should be in terms of that, but there are few military veterans who have been absorbed by departments in provincial space and also at the local level.
Thanks, Chair and Honourable Members. Two things I just want to come to. Firstly, on communication. We have reviewed the communication practice, so which is in line with some of the concerns, partly related to the committee, but also by our computer itself. I must indicate that we undertook 7 roadshows last year or in this financial year, accompanying the Deputy Minister. We utilized those roadshows to get a sense of how do military veterans feel about the way we provide service, what are the issues they are raising, and it has informed our reviews of the practice. We have shifted from the PR stroke media emphasis to a much more benefit oriented communication. Let me say, we are now developing pamphlets and leaflets per benefit. What are the steps to follow and how do you access, what are the qualification criteria, etc. Per benefit, ranging from compensation up to burial support, 11 benefits in there. We will be providing you samples of how we are implementing and what is each pamphlet says. I think in the next quarter you'll see a new slide. That's why we're saying all out to start in the third quarter of 2017-2018. However, some elements of it have started. We are about to be undertaking roadshows to Northwest and we'll be ready because, as we have said, this is the project addressing clash of things. Secondly, this week we're supposed to be this side. some few elements of Hamilton into ecumenical dialogue. Because our understanding is that many calibrators don't require only website reviews. Some of them don't have email. Some don't have radios or television, especially in rural areas. So you recognize that the PR strong marketing exercise that is based on mainstream media communities wants much more direct interaction. So our strategy now is to emphasize the road through, to allow for questions, to explain and clarify, but also to read deeper that people can read and will be diversifying language. In fact, it is being presented to ask for approval before the financial year. Just to put that to bed. The second part to me is about the issue of possibility that was raised by the chair of people getting into the database who are not supposed to. We are now interacting with state agencies and other organs of state that are assisting us as we are moving towards internal analysis of the data. Where we are with PDFI, we dealt with the data in a much more holistic way than it was done in the past. It was piecemeal, it was based on people coming and files being taken. We've got electronic values, which if you look at the slide, page 5, in the first line at top. In paragraph 2 of that slide, entitled database, we've disaggregated the database. So it becomes clear that dealing with it in a much more generic manner doesn't help us to be able to identify problems and deal with the solutions of those problems. So we disaggregated it because it's analyzing it at aggregated figures. But also as we get challenges of people who are not supposed to be in the database, we isolate them. And that is where we're going to be soliciting state law agencies to assist us in this identification. And that process is underway. And appoint us as we might begin to get into the bottom of the issues. Because what may help to recall vulnerable members, the origination of a database is also linked to the fact that people are in associations. Some are in MK, some in APLA, some in ASANLA, and some from SADS, some for the TBD system. It's becoming clearer that it's an issue that we can only resolve if we work closely with those associations. We should know that Honorable Esther was in MK indeed in 1976, indeed he trained, indeed whatever, which there might be limitation of the department to do. Not only because it's 5 years, but because of the nature and design of the structure at the time. So we're becoming more closer in interaction with them. The letter was written in May to them, it has subsequently reminded them to say let them verify so that it becomes easier when you verify that we're almost having a less risk of possibility infiltration of the database by people who are unsure or don't depend on the data. And that is proving to be much more helpful now. And it's giving us optimism that the database might be resolved sooner than how it has been. Lastly, Chair, with your indulgence, just to emphasize, we've come to a point where as we're interrogating benefits, especially in the first environment guided by the extreme means, you are correct, Honorable Esau. We're beginning to prioritize. Those active benefits that are there, obviously they are continuing. But those that were not active, we're saying we must fast track policies and memoranda of understanding to create the basis of framework. Proper delivery and certainty of correlation between delivery and policy. So for task force, you will see, will not necessarily be delivered by design, by deliberated agreement, that it is lagging behind on policy framework. However, we're beginning to be even much more clear that it is not necessarily a one-screen process. The Department of Transport has developed a memorandum of understanding, which it wants to interact with us for. All its entities, CASA, naming them, also have got draft SLAs they want to interact with us. We won't necessarily have to wait for policy to be convened. So we may have to have creative ways of fixing the car wash model. Where we can implement, we implement, but we create standard operating procedures and other instruments to guide certain implementation. So we're beginning to be much more pragmatic than theoretical about accurate statistics.
Thank you very much. Are there none of the members before we adjourn the meeting. If none, or Honorable Wilson.
Honorable Chair, I acknowledge that there is the half the hour, and also an acknowledgement that this may have to get out of further and awareness about it, and that the skill of development itself, the allocation of understatement. Well understood. So that the need to the awareness is very important, and also it's not only the non-statutory forces, but also statutory forces. People that were in the army, they were driving those trucks, but they don't have a license. They've been working on different projects within the defense environment without qualification. So a lot of experience with soldiers. And I don't think we have addressed that, and also the issue of the CAT, the Center for Advanced Training for soldiers and for military vets. There was some agreement that the center used both military vets. DMV insisted that they may have to take charge of the center. I don't know if that center is really being used effectively to actually uplift our military veterans. So what is actually happening there? And also the issue of MOUs and SLAs. I do appreciate quantity is important, it's not more important than quality. And also the rollout and how it will be affected, the actual agreements. But I think it's important that all our learning institutions throughout the country, because our military veterans are all over the country, that there be some agreement with all of them. So it's a generic MOU that needs to be drafted. NASFAS operates essentially in our public higher institutions of learning, where they, the universities that are funded or subsidized by government, so they pay. Does NASFAS operate in other environments? And I think we need to ask, are those environments or institutions available or close by accessible to military veterans? So the funding model is only one that we actually have with NASFAS. Because it's Stevens Colleges and it's universities. But we probably have to address in a more holistic way to look at even other institutions that are offering skills development, skills training at different levels. We have community ones here in Cape Town that are operating right in the community. They are not with a TVET, they are not with a university, but they've got accredited course under sub-1 and QF levels. And I think those avenues need to be exploited to the benefit of military veterans. So that at the end of the day, they are productive, they can get a job, they got the skill, they can actually go into the market and also be paid decently because they got an accredited qualification and they're not further exploited. I think that's one of the key issues like this. And also, just for the benefit of the committee, I'm personally not aware of all the policies and the means tests set for each and every benefit. I only read all the documents that I receive and what is online, and I haven't seen any of those things. I would appreciate if those matters come up also for discussion because policy extension of legislation, that we also be briefed on it, and that we also interrogate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Professor. Honorable Member, we won't be in a position to adopt the amendments because we are not correcting. But let me thank everybody who is here. Thank you, Honorable.